Koji is a venture capital firm cultivating community. This podcast is dedicated to cultivating conversations. Web 3.0 is democratizing the internet, and Koji Conversations is here to democratize access to the founders, investors, and creators building it from the ground up.
Welcome back to another episode of Koji Conversations. This week, we are taking a little bit of a pivot and talking all things policy and regulation. And it is my pleasure to invite our latest guest, Senator Andrew Bragg from the Liberal Party. He has been essentially the flagship senator for crypto here in Australia and a real pioneer in making sure it's part of the conversation, both in the minds of politicians, regulators, industry, but everyday Australians as well. So welcome to the podcast, Senator.
Hi, Sophie. How are you?
Good, thank you. Senator, you've been a real champion of crypto and advocating kind of a policy setting that will unlock innovation rather than stifling it for digital assets. And recently, and rightfully so, you've received a lot of praise, and we'll get to that. But take me back to kind of early 2021 when, you know, you're the chair of the Senate Select Committee for Australia as a Technology and Financial Centre, and you say to the government, look, I want to tackle an inquiry on crypto, among other things. What did that process look like, and what made you want to do it?
Well, I think the first point I'd make is that some people thought, you know, why do you want to hang out with all these crypto people? Because unless you wanted to get into drug dealing or sort of, you know, terrorism, what are you wanting to actually achieve? So there's a lot of scepticism. But, I mean, I guess I was interested in what the technology could do for the economy rather than focusing too much on the personal investment component. Because, I mean, any conversation in Australia about anything inevitably comes back to personal finances. I've often said, you know, Napoleon said the English were a nation of shopkeepers. I mean, the Australians are certainly a nation of personal investment obsessives. And so trying to get people to separate the idea that you could have an inquiry into something like this that wasn't going to look at your personal financial arrangements was a bit of a challenge. But look, we Josh Frydenberg was very supportive at the outset, and frankly, it wouldn't have happened without his support. So then we did, you know, a 6-month review. So.
And the committee came to, I think, 12 recommendations in the end. And the Treasurer, as you said, has been very supportive and ultimately has asked Treasury to do a consultation paper. But kind of that's, I guess, you know, relatively jargon for personal investors, as you say, you know, following the ins and outs of Canberra. So what did you learn from the committee process in talking to industry? And what, in your view, should be the government's kind of priorities for the dynamic, you know, and prosperous approach to crypto policy and regulation?
Well, I guess I learned that the technology was going to take over large parts of the economy and eat lots of jobs, but also create lots of jobs and create lots of opportunities and unshackle ideas and ultimately provide, you know, more choice, lower prices. That's what I learned. But I also learned that it was going to be a real communication challenge to get past the reputational issues that are inevitable when you wade into this space. So what I've tried to do is fashion a form of words that can leverage traditional financial regulation and sort of straddle that world as well as the sort of tech world. And I think we've done that reasonably well. But as I said, I mean, you know, the Treasurer was very open-minded about this because I think he saw that payments generally was an opportunity for us to have a more fulsome policy agenda, where traditionally this has been run by the Reserve Bank, which is kind of a bit strange. I know this is an inside baseball point, but, I mean, the Reserve Bank, which, of course, is in the news for, you know, looking at interest rates and the like, is not an expert in payments. And payments regulation and payments policy is going to be a really big lever. And as it stands, the federal government doesn't really do much in this space, but we're about to do a lot.
Would you also say it's, you know, kind of relevant that payments and the approach to regulation of crypto and digital assets does need to remain relatively separate because there is kind of those technological idiosyncrasies surrounding smart contracts, DeFi, you know, and all this trustless infrastructure that is blockchain?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a separation between what is crypto and what is payments, but there's also some places where it comes together from a policy perspective. But I would say that effectively what we have now is a situation where Australia has some of the most detailed policy out there for regulating crypto anywhere in the world. And if you look at the Biden executive order from, I think it was February this year, and you compare it to the Frydenberg statement from December last year, I mean, we're 3 or 4 months ahead in terms of the commissioning of various reports and moving towards legislation at the federal level. And recently I had an opportunity to speak to Cynthia Lummis, who's a US senator from Wyoming. And Wyoming has been a really leading jurisdiction, not just in the US but around the world in terms of pioneering decentralized autonomous organization laws, addressing debanking and a whole lot of other issues. And, you know, it was really quite incredible to think that a person that was, I guess, in the public, you know, in the US political world, regarded as a real sort of Trumper, I think in her own language, would be quite supportive about what Biden has put out. So, I mean, I'm really quite keen for us to work closely with our friends in the US to try and lock down some of the law that is going to be required in that kind of core crypto space.
Yeah, and I think, you know, President Biden's language was relatively modest, and perhaps that's because the conversation there is a lot more like under a heavier microscope than it has been here, and you've been granted relative autonomy. But I think Australia is definitely pretty world-leading in how open-minded and forward-thinking they are being when it comes to this. When you had that call with Senator Lummis, which is a Republican senator, I believe, what was, you know, can you shed some more light on kind of how the US or how maybe she as a senator is thinking about crypto regulation in Wyoming?
Well, they have put in place a whole bunch of state laws, and in the US, company and securities law can be more heavily weighted towards the states, whereas in Australia we do it all at a federal level. And so they are keen to protect what they have put in place at the state level, but also provide the internationally competitive position that only Washington can deliver for them. And so I think where it should go is some sort of a passporting standard or some sort of an agreed framework for, you know, a minimum standard for the gatekeepers, right, for the markets, for the custodians, and any kind of harmonisation around DAOs and these sort of things would be highly desirable because, frankly, I mean, we have so much in common with the United States, culturally, militarily, economically, and this is going to be a really big economic change. And I would like us to work closely with the US. That's our objective.
Mm. And I think Wyoming specifically has been traditionally very innovative. And as you mentioned, when things are done at the state level, the incentive mechanisms are different. But I think Wyoming was the first state to welcome LLCs as a different kind of corporate structure. And as you mentioned, they've done something similar with DAOs. Recognizing DAOs as a corporate-like structure or, you know, some form of recognition within the Australian corporations system was one of the recommendations of the committee. But recently you've kind of advocated for a specifically enshrined Digital Services Act. What are you laying out there and why do you think it is important that it could resemble something entirely different?
Well, I don't know how many people on this podcast have looked at the Corporations Act. If they have, they'll know that it's sort of frozen in time in the year 2000. I'm not sure how many people have looked at the tax code, but there's two tax codes, 36 and 97. If you want to be competitive in this space, you want to give outsiders a clear view of what your laws are. And I accept that, you know, and a key objective for a legislature is not to add more and more laws onto the books. But everyone accepts the need, there needs to be some more law here. And I think we should seriously consider the marketing value of having it as a standalone act of our parliament because we want to make it easy to navigate. And I just think, you know, burying things is further and further chapters in the Corps Act is not always the answer. So, yeah, I guess it was my desire to try and see it to be as clean as possible.
Mm. And I guess, as you say, as the Corporations Act has been frozen in time, you know, potentially just the likelihood and the ambition that you do want to get this through Parliament and you do want to act quickly and maybe that's a better vehicle for it.
It could just be easier. And I think we need to explore, depending on what happens with the election result. I mean, I think either way, we need to do some more bipartisan work here. I know that in the US, they the industry, the blockchain industry and the crypto sector hosted a number of bipartisan lunches and dinners that Senator Loomis was involved with. And so I think that's something that we should explore in Australia, because we don't want to play politics with these laws and these proposals, because they're too important to our future prospects. And so it'd be better if we can try and agree the broad principles and the law design and then try and get them through. And as I say, I mean, I'm not fussy. If it's a new chapter in the Corps Act, fine, but I just think it could be easier to sell if it's a standalone law externally.
Mm. And you're right, you know, of course we would hope that when it comes to unlocking innovation there is bipartisan support, but that hasn't necessarily been the way the story's unfolded so far in Australia. What are kind of the big partisan tussles that are shaping up between the two major parties when it comes to regulation or, you know, policy settings for digital assets?
Well, I mean, Labor don't have any policies and they don't really have any clue as far as I can see. And that's the main issue, that they haven't really engaged on the issues. Their shadow minister, Stephen Jones, calls it a scam. So, I mean, I think most people would agree that there can be scams in crypto, but the whole thing is on a scam.
Mm.
And it is a fundamentally, you know, anti-technology approach to call digital assets a scam. So, look, they haven't really given us much to work with, to be frank. And I know that that's really a big risk. I mean, I think the only thing that the Labor Party have said is that they will be more open to consumer protection promotion rather than promoting the industry. But, I mean, I think our plans have been trying to do both. I mean, we're not proposing to do anything to undermine consumer protection. In fact, we've recommended an approach which would put in place quite stringent protections. So, look, the answer to the question is they have no idea and no plan. So if you're interested in cryptocurrency, you're interested in the future of our plan here, you know, voting Labor is a big vote for a big black hole.
Mm. And what in, you know, as far as the government's approach, who are under your leadership, under Minister Hume's leadership, under the Treasurer's leadership, you know, driving this bus forward, what are the biggest kind of roadblocks that industry needs to help government solve, or, you know, founders and projects need to help government solve in order to get this all over the line?
Well, I think that there's a lot of engagement that's going to be required with the crossbench in the Senate because the policies and the laws that we promote already, I think, are quite strong and would put Australia on a good path. But there's no assurance that Labor would agree to our crypto policy reforms. And so I think the best bet for people that are worried about this is to try and engage with the crossbench and explain why the proposals would improve our capacity to give more choice and lower prices to consumers, but also to protect consumers who are wanting to wade into this space.
Yeah, and the lower prices thing I find really interesting because it's competitive financial products, isn't it? And it's not that it's like, you know, taking some big stick or pitchfork to the banking sector, because I think a lot of DeFi protocols or projects want to work with banks in delivering with consumers and kind of using these DeFi rails within existing interfaces. But, yeah, you know, the yields that you're getting engaging in crypto are 10, 20% versus my 0.25% that I'm getting once a month with my bank account. And, you know, injecting competition into the banking sector cannot be argued as a bad thing.
Well, I agree with that exactly. And that is the best argument, because we want people to get the maximum opportunity to harness the technology, right? So put it another way, you know, Australia is a nation of oligopolies, and it has been since the development of modern Australia. And this is the best opportunity we have to break down those vested interests and break down those oligopolies with new ideas and low prices. So the other point is that I try to be an optimistic person. I think that this is an agenda that could be seen as a negative or a positive. I actually think that you need to have a plan to manage the disruption because it's going to happen. But you're better off looking at it through this prism. You can harness the technology to create new options rather than being disrupted. And you can see the disruption as a positive thing for the economy and for the people. And that's why I think that the Labor Party having no plan and no idea here is so risky, because they're going to leave the country massively exposed to the disruption.
And I think this kind of goes back to what you said in the way you've tried to frame the conversation or create the public discourse around these assets, that it's not this fringe kind of community full of criminals and launderers.
Yeah, I mean, for people who wanted to see more competition in the banking sector, this is a ticket to do it. Unless you have the appropriate regulation, then you're exposing the Australian people to massive risk because it is unregulated, but you're also exposing massive regulatory arbitrage because you can't have a massively regulated financial sector and something totally unregulated over here. Now, I understand that some people want to live in libertarian nirvana, but that's very nice. But, I mean, we do have regulation in the financial sector, and so that's a bridge that we're willing to cross. And, look, the other thing I've sort of learned from being in this space is there are going to be trade-offs here. Right, and at the moment you've got 500 digital currency exchanges, and once you put in place a licensing regime with capital requirements for market licenses, you know, you might go down to 25 or 30.
That drastic, now, do you think?
Now, I'm not saying that's desirable. In fact, it's undesirable because you want to see more competition and more choice, but it's highly likely that the bar will be set at a point where there'll be a consolidation. It may not be as drastic as that, but over the long run, there may be a real consolidation because of the regulation. And I think that while that would upset some people, I think we have to be honest that in regulating this space, there won't be 500 digital currency exchanges, right? I mean, there might be 100. There might be 100. There might be 200 for the short period of time ahead. But these are the trade-offs that we need to make. And we need to be honest and we need to be aware of the trade-off because, I mean, naturally, I don't want to see a bar that is going to destroy new innovation. And what you've got to be careful of avoiding is locking in, you know, the where you are at any point in time, like the Corporations Act has done in some ways. So we've got to be careful, but we do need to accept that unless there are new requirements like capital, probity, risk management, governance arrangements, then the next time that a bank decides they want to put crypto onto their platforms, they will continue to use a New York parented company rather than a New South Wales parented company or New South Wales company. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think in exchange for those trade-offs, you create a lot of certainty in the market, which is good for consumers, and that breeds innovation in and of itself because people know the guidelines within what they're working for. You just alluded to, you know, something about needing to have a relatively flexible or a somewhat light touch approach. Do you think there's a world in which this evolves in more of a sandbox kind of spot for 12 to 24 months? Or do you think, you know, if pending an election, but if the government can see this through, they are going to lock in an agenda?
Look, I'm a bit of a negative on these sandbox things. I mean, they remind me of, you know, going to the childcare centre or something. I mean, I don't think they work. I mean, that well. I just think, look, we promised that we would move quickly. We released the report in October. Frydenberg responded to it in December. And then in March, just before the election, we released consultation papers which look at custody and market licensing systems, as well as more updates around the Council of Financial Regulators' work on debanking and a very broad-based review on taxation, which the Board of Tax is doing. So I am confident that if we win the election, we can pass the crypto market licensing system this year, and that is what I'm aiming to achieve. And I will be planning to... I've been asked to support the Treasurer on implementation, that we do a very, very short exposure draft, maybe, which is a draft bill for people who don't obsess over the ins and outs of Canberra, a draft law, but with a view that we would need to legislate it this year and pass it both houses and it becomes law. I just think from a consumer protection point of view, we need to have something, but the biggest driver here is actually making sure that we're not going to cede any more investment offshore. If we just say, oh, it's all too hard, we're having an election this year, we can't do it, you're just going to see more and more businesses move their domicile to the UK or Singapore.
Mm. Yeah, which is definitely already happening or has happened to a certain extent. So over the past year, so it's coming up to nearly a year since kind of the committee was given its reach or established its parameters. In terms of where you think the general public is as well as the political class, what are kind of the general conversations that you're having with your colleagues now compared to a year ago?
It hasn't changed a whole lot, I have to say.
Really?
People have been busy with COVID, and I think that there is a small group of colleagues that are interested in it, but I think we're still a long way ahead of the curve here, I think. That's my sense, that we're still way, way ahead, and that most people have not had an opportunity to think about what sort of laws we should have for crypto. Because that's inevitably the conversation you have to have with a group of legislators when you ask about colleagues. And I don't think I've had any conversations about what sort of law design we should have.
So you're still the fringe senator who's hanging out with the criminals in the crypto world.
And it sort of suits me. But look, I think it'll change after the election. I mean, an election does suck a lot of energy out of the political system.
Mm.
And the reality is that whatever happens with the election result, there'll be a strong imperative, I think, to put in place a lot of the laws that we recommended. My belief is that will be recommended to Labor or the Coalition, because it'll be in the Treasury's recommended approach. Because, frankly, and this is one of the things I like about Joe Longo, the ASIC chair, is he said, look, you know, if you go into crypto, it's unregulated. So you lose your, you do your shirt, you do your shirt.
Mm.
So there's a strong driver for us to do this. So I think very quickly after the election, we will see a maturing of the conversation around what sort of legislative design we should have. And I will preempt that there will be a lot of acrimony and angst around the setting of the bar on things like capital requirements and governance standards and what should be in Australia, what can be offshore, these sorts of things. I know people will have strong views. So we will need to do a lot of work to settle our position and then we need to be prepared to stick by it, because at the end of the day, this is not something that we're going to outsource to a regulator to make a call on. We'll make the call as the government if we're returned to government, and I hope that Labor will do the same if they form a government.
Absolutely. And you gave a speech recently kind of outlining what your priorities would be. That would kind of be the cornerstones of that framework. So it was being technology neutrality, letting the private sector lead. And I think Minister Hume echoed some of those cornerstones. Can you lay out for our listeners, you know, what they were and why you think they are the top four priorities in how we should approach this?
Well, we need to make sure we don't. Basically, the first point is we need to ensure that the Parliament controls what the law looks like, because we need to be accountable to the Australian people. The second point is we need to be flexible, so we need to be able to make changes to the regulations if we need to. I mean, the fact is that it took 21 years to change a component of the Corporations Act which required wet signatures rather than digital signatures. I mean, we can't wait 21 years to pass a law to change something in these new Acts of Parliament, but we need to be able to change them with a regulation. So that's key. We've got to maintain dynamism in this space. I mean, a lot of this is going to rest on having members and senators in Parliament that are engaged and interested in these issues. I think one of the reasons that these crypto issues were pushed into the sand is because there weren't a whole lot of people that were prepared to take an interest. And it's a bit like when I came into the Senate, there was you know, Labor had sort of put in the buy now, pay later, Afterpays in with the cash converters. So they were in the same sort of group of companies.
Yeah.
Which I don't have any issue with cash converters, but it's a very different kind of company and structure and organisation to Afterpay. And, of course, the last person who sort of did a review into cryptocurrency was, I think, Sam Dastyari, which was quite a long time ago. So, yeah, I mean, I think we need to find some people that are interested in the space, I think, to keep it focused and to make sure that it doesn't lose, whatever we legislate maintains its contemporary relevance.
I'm careful not to lump in senators with the likes of the House of Representatives, but I think it was Finder did a recent report, and it's you know 10 to 17% of Australians now hold crypto in some form or another. Do you think there is a relative, you know, comparison to kind of 10 to 17% maybe of the House of Reps that are thinking about this?
In terms of their personal investments?
Yeah, or you know, whether they're interested in learning about it on behalf of their constituents who they claim to represent.
Well, I think that the pecuniary interest register shows that no one has taken the place. Maybe Jason Falinski has. So far, just one person. I mean, I was reluctant to go there while I was running the review, and I'm cautious. You know, I think it's worth having a look at some of these ETFs, which are not investing directly into coins. They're basically investing into shares, which are companies that are providing services to these sectors. I think that's well worth a look, but that's not direct investment. And again, I say, I don't think we want politicians to learn about crypto through the lens of personal investment. I think we want politicians to learn about it through the prism of what technology can do for the economy and what are the disruptive benefits. That may run against the grain of what some of the vested interests want and the captains of industry, but that's where we need to go. Yeah, thanks, Sophie. It's good to chat to you. And I should have said to you as well, I also want to make sure that we don't let the ASX push us into being a sort of backwater. So it's really important that we don't...
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's really important that we don't... I mean, one of the things that people are talking about now, there's some fear that we might have a situation where we could have foreign ETFs given sort of regulatory equivalence and being admitted effectively to the ASX and being able to trade, and then Australians could then purchase almost, you know, directly into Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever.
Because that would represent a form of regulatory arbitrage?
Yes, and that would be... And I'm not tech, and I want to see Australians get access to the broadest possible array of options. But I don't want to see that happen before our own Australian ETFs have been given an opportunity to be admitted. So you shouldn't, in my view, you shouldn't be a protectionist, but you shouldn't be afraid to advocate for your own domestic interests.
Yeah, absolutely. And supporting Australian companies provide these kind of well-known financial products to people looking to get exposure.
We don't want to see Australians get access only to foreign funds. We want to see Australians get access to the funds they want to get access to, but we want to see Australian funds as part of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't want, you know, Australian consumers to have to go offshore because the Australian government was too slow to act, or the ASX, or, you know, whoever it ends up being. So I think that's a point well made, and certainly one worth canvassing for the listeners. But thanks again for jumping on, Senator. It's we're all indebted to you over in the on the industry side of things.
All good. Thanks, Sophie, and all the best. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining this Koji conversation. To continue the conversation offline, DM us on Twitter at @Koji_capital or reach out to us via email hello@koji.capital. Or jump into our Discord linked in our bio.